Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 337, recorded January 22nd, 2012. The Dodfather. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT1. And by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers your weekly tech news and analysis. And what a panel today. It's so funny because we thought because there's this football game on that we would not. And, we asked John C. and he says, no, I'm watching the football game. And I thought, oh, we'll never get a panel together. We better go to Brazil or Britain or somewhere where they don't like this stuff. And look what we got. We got one of the best panels ever, starting to my left. Ed Bott, who we haven't had on for ages. It's great to see you again, Ed.
Good to be here, Leo.
Ed blogs for ZDNet. What's the, it's right there, edbot.com. That's the place.
There's a link to the ZDNet blog on that page.
And especially covering Windows. But I have to say, you have been really forthright and outspoken lately about a lot of interesting stuff, not just Windows related, including, and we're going to get to it in just a little bit, Apple's educational announcements.
Yep.
Also here with us from, let's say, from Google Plus, kind of is,
that's
Mike
where
Elgin.
I came from. That's where I was before I came here.
Mike Elgin, who lives on Google Plus. If you go to Elgin.com, E-L-G-A-N, that's where you'll go. He, of course, uses Google Plus to generate his newsletter, his weekly newsletter, which is a must-read. It has been for a long time. Also, catch him on Computer World and other sites. So it's great to have you. Thanks for bringing vegan, raw, organic chocolate.
It's a drug.
Well, you know what?
You can smoke
not
it.
A controlled substance.
Eileen Rivera, it's a drug, isn't it?
Yes, I can confirm it is a drug.
She is an addict.
I am.
Legal in California.
It is so good. Holy moly. Dark as midnight. It's raw. Fearless is the name. Thank you. Is this part of you and your wife do this diet thing?
Yes, we do.
Is this part of it?
It's pretty close. The chocolate is raw. It's pure cocoa. There's no junk in it. It has rapadura in it. But yeah, this is
pretty much what?
Rapadura.
Is that good or bad?
It's good. It's a fairly innocuous form of sugar. So...
Oh, well, I'm eating more of them.
But that's all it has, chocolate and...
Rapadura.
Good stuff.
And it's made of 100% post-consumer recycled paper.
That's right.
That's great. Patrick Norton is also here from TechZilla.com. Great to see you, Patrick.
Pleasure to be here.
Barged into your broadcast at CES.
It was awesome.
I actually had a bet. I said, okay, $10, if I peek my head around the corner while Patrick is broadcasting... He will break the broadcast and say, Leo, and I won.
Well, that's the way it works.
It also wasn't like, you popped up and disappeared. You popped up and there was a hang time.
Well, I was just wanted to win the money. Great to see you once again.
Thank you, sir.
He's wearing his college shirt. I love that. Joe College. Is that I think that didn't
yes.
John Belushi wear that in the Animal House?
Yeah. Yeah. Before he became Senator Blutarsky.
Love it. College. It's generic. Hey, who's that? Wait a minute. Callie Lewis is here also from GeekBeat.tv and Revision 3. Great to see you.
You too. I want to know more about this diet where I can eat chocolate all the time.
Well, we'll have to ask Mike. Look at him. He looks fit. He looks trim.
I tell you, but I have to pay Apple 30%.
So. All right. We'll get right to it because I know you and Ed Bott have opposing viewpoints. And I'd love to talk about this. So there was a lot this week. We're going to talk about SOPA, PIPA, the blackout on Wednesday, 29 members of Congress recanting because of it.
Recanting.
And then the very next day, megaupload.com explode. That's what I call it. Megaupload. mega upload explodes with a big bust. We have Apple's announcements that same day. There's a ton to talk about. Let's start with the Apple announcement. So they did it early in the morning, 7 a.m. our time. So for those of you who tuned in Twit to see the live broadcast, I was sleeping. Sorry. Not getting up for that. But a lot of live bloggers, and I was watching the live blog in my jammies. And they made three big announcements. Not unexpected, but three big education announcements. Number one, they announced iBooks 2, which in the iBook store now features a big textbook section. They have a few free textbooks. The E.O. Wilson book on biodiversity is a couple of chapters, but it's beautiful. It's got video, interactive graphics. There's an algebra textbook, a number of textbooks, all of which are $14.99 or less. They got the three big guys involved. We'll see how much of their content they put on here, but they all Pearson, McGraw-Hill, Harcourt Brace, Jovovich, or whatever they're called these days. They keep adding names. I don't know. All say they're players. That's like 90% of the textbook market. So that was the first announcement. Second announcement was a tool to create these books, an iBook author tool that's free in the Mac App Store. The iBook's, of course, free on iPad and iPhone. And finally, and I think this probably, to me, maybe the most important announcement but kind of got buried, a new iTunes U that is features additional tools for teachers to share their syllabuses and exams and notes and K through 12 as well as university. I think, frankly, if you talk about a world changer, it's this. I mean, this iTunes U has always been like the best kept secret of iTunes. Yeah. You can get a college education. You don't get credit, but you don't have to pay any money for it.
Right.
And it's amazing. And
it's
now
the sharing notes part I've never really taken a lot from, because I've borrowed people's notes in college, and boy, people take some really strange notes in the middle of lectures. Yeah, right.
Hey, you don't have to go to a lecture. Right. You know, you can do it all at home. Maybe not. I mean, it's important here in the U.S. There are lots of people who are smart who can't afford a higher education. But I think worldwide, even more important in emerging nations, this is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. And many of the things that they added to it, I think, will increase adoption by university. If you go to iTunes U, there's a lot of content there, but it's not a lot of content. It's not like it's constantly being refreshed. Many of the lectures on specific subjects have been there for 2 years. There haven't been new ones. I think with additional adoption through these other tools, we're going to see a lot more schools embracing it. It's also now for high schools.
K through 12.
K through 12, exactly. And so I think that part of it is really pretty exciting for education.
I agree. Now,
I love that they've done all this. I think textbooks, fantastic, and everything. But can I rant for a second about the name iTunes 2? I mean, iBooks 2? Like, seriously?
What did you want?
Could they come up with a better name?
Well, it's the second one. The truth is, for most people, it won't look like it's a new app at all. It's just an update to the old app, and it gives them this additional textbook section. That's all.
It is a great thing. I just hate the name.
Well, we'll come up with a better name. Let's see. iTunes.
Why does it even need a new name?
iTunes Me. How about
Me?
That?
Yeah, that'll sell.
You go with iTunes U.
iTunes U and iTunes Me. iBooks 2.
They could ask Microsoft to suggest a name.
Yeah, that's a good idea. BPOS. There you go.
That'd be awesome.
So EdBot, though, you and a lot of other people called attention to the fact that this iBook author tool, despite the fact that it's free, has what you consider to be an onerous EULA.
That's part of it. And the other part of it is in a brand new post that I just published at ZDNet about 7 minutes ago.
Ah, you sneaky boy.
Well, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon. had to publish it before the football game.
His editor's off, so you can slip it in there.
but yeah, there's a couple issues there. Number one, this is the first consumer software and end user license agreement that I've ever seen that restricts the right of the customer to do whatever they want with the output of the program.
Not true. Microsoft Office does that.
No, Word doesn't say you can't write.
Yes, it does. The Microsoft Office home and student version says You cannot use anything made with the software for commercial purposes or even nonprofit uses.
Well, Mike, no. Actually, if you read it, it says you can't use the software for that. It doesn't talk about the output of it. And I'd be perfectly happy if Apple wanted to say in their license agreement, this software may only be used for non-commercial purposes. You know, that's fine. But they, even if you use it to create a PDF file, you can't sell that PDF file.
Oh, that's interesting.
You have to give it does. It, away.
It has a number of different outputs, including the modified EPUB 3 format that Apple's proposing, which is an extension of EPUB 3, but also PDF, HTML5, and some others. So you're saying if I make a PDF with this tool, which anybody could see now, it doesn't. And it, by the way, it loses a lot of the multimedia features, right? I presume
all of them, pretty much all of them.
But I still can't sell it.
Right.
I mean, I don't like it, but isn't it their right to say that? I mean, it's a, you know, I mean, it's a free tool. There will be open source choices for EPUB 3, won't there?
Well, what's interesting is, as I explained in the new post that I just put up today, Apple,
which is titled "How Apple is Sabotaging an Open Standard for Digital Books."
Right. Apple has built the iBooks platform on the open EPUB standard. You can go back through its public statements on iBooks, and over and over and over again, they talk about their support for the open, industry-leading EPUB standard. With the iBooks 2 program, what they've done is they have added non-standard attributes to what is essentially the underlying EPUB standard. You can't import an EPUB document into it. You can't export an EPUB document from it. And so what they're basically doing is the same exact thing. It's embrace, extend, extinguish. Just like Microsoft tried to do in the 1990s with Internet Explorer to Netscape, this is what Apple is trying to do by leveraging their dominant position in the tablet marketplace with the iPad and then creating a proprietary, incompatible version of an open industry standard. Patrick. And I don't like that.
Well, I get you with the whole undermining open standards, but exactly what percentage of books are actually consumed on, say, the iBook compared to the Kindle and the umpteen other reader platforms out there?
I would guess that the percentage is roughly equal to the percentage that Internet Explorer had in 1995 when Windows 95 came out.
Well, and it's
probably in the 1-3% range.
And iOS is going to be much higher in the future. You can almost guarantee that that's the case.
That's why they're doing it.
So you start now, you give it away, build market share, and then you dominate. You effectively, yep.
I'm talking about the entire
dump. But that what he's saying, just like Internet Explorer was dumped in order to put Mozilla out of business, Netscape, I should say, out of business. We give it away free, and then we gain market share, and then we clobber them. So you're saying it's that kind of predatory practice. And you know what? I have to say,
absolutely.
Completely what I'd expect from Apple.
Exactly. There are 17 ebook file formats, according to Wikipedia.
But EPUB 3 is the one that we're all going to be excited about, right?
Yeah, EPUB 3. And the point that they took an open standard and made it not open, that's what Kindle did as well.
True. They used the Mobi standard, which is not, which is proprietary.
But all of this whole license agreement thing, to me, my belief is that they're trying to change cultural behavior, essentially, is what they're trying to do, in exactly the same way that when they came out with the iPhone and had a keyboard everybody complained about on screen, which nobody wanted to use, they didn't let anybody make a hardware keyboard. They didn't make one. They didn't let anybody else make one. Why? Because they wanted to train the world, which they did for 2 years at least, to get used to this. And they actually brought on-screen keyboards and made the world safe for on-screen keyboards. Yeah. They did that successfully. They do that a lot. Google does it, too. Changing behavior is the business model.
Doesn't mean it's okay,
that's
though.
The Starbucks business model, too, to change behavior.
Sure.
But I'm saying that this is why they're doing it. The reason they have these restrictions is they don't want you to use the iBooks authoring tool to do a lowest common denominator thing that works just as well with a PDF.
No,
or whatever.
They want a proprietary format.
They want to get a bunch of people used to the idea of creating the multimedia thing with video and stuff. And yes, it's because they want to sell iBooks. It's because they want to control the market. They don't want to just control the educational market. They want to control digital publishers.
So
there's no question about that.
This strategy only works if the market buys into it. What is the likelihood that Apple will succeed here? I mean, won't people say, well, screw that. I'm not going to do that. I
succeed.
Want to sell it in Amazon.
Notice,
they'll succeed
right?
exactly how they succeed in other markets. They'll have the high-end, expensive, educated minority of
the BMW
users.
Set.
Yes. Yeah.
Callie, nobody exactly. will notice, so it'll just happen?
Well, that's the way a lot of things happen, right?
Right. It just sneaks in.
You're absolutely right about, you know, Apple trying to change behaviors. We see it over and over and over again. I just got a new MacBook Air, and I'm dealing with Lion for the first time, actually. And, you know, I mean, they're always doing that. And I don't know that we're seeing anything different than, you know, Amazon doing the same thing,
locking everything
down. So, I mean, we're seeing it also in apps on TVs. Everyone's locking into their own ecosystem.
Right.
And this seems to be the world we just live in.
But as we know, that's bad for consumers. It's good for business, bad for consumers.
Exactly.
So, Edbot, what do we do about this?
Where's the compromise?
How do we solve that? I mean, people do.
Well, I hope the Department of Justice is paying attention to this stuff. They used to.
Yeah, but the Department of Justice is supposed to pay attention to competing standards by competing companies that enable more competition in a marketplace?
No, the Department of Justice is supposed to pay attention to a company that has a dominant position in a marketplace such as tablets.
Right.
Okay. And when they leverage that dominant position to gain market share in another area by giving things away. The analogies to Internet Explorer and Windows in the 1996 to 1998 period are just, they're just staggering.
But look what happened with that prosecution. I mean, the Department of Justice went after him. It took 10 years by the time, got the concessions.
It did not take 10 years, Leo. The suit was filed in 1998, and it was settled in 2001. And it was ruled by the judge in 2000. So it took only 2 years for the suit and then another year beyond that to negotiate the terms of the actual settlement rather than appeal.
There's two problems with that analogy. First of all, Microsoft's case all along was we can't force anybody to use IE. If a better browser comes along, people will use it. And that's exactly what happened. Better browsers came along, two of them, and people increasingly are using those browsers. The second problem is that Microsoft's monopoly, their dominant position, was in the upwards of 90% market share. Google's going to save Apple from the position of being a monopolist because the Android tablets...
Apple saved Microsoft in some ways from being a monopolist.
Exactly. So Apple is moving away from its dominant position slowly. I mean, what is a dominant position? Is 70%?
Apple may be a dominant position in tablets, but we're talking about e-readers, so you have to take in the Kindle, the Sony Reader, you know, the Nook, and a half dozen other platforms.
Ed's point is that the monopoly position platform is the tablet, and then
my problem is I'm not entirely buying into the idea that people I don't see as many people. I mean, I was walking around Alameda the other day. I saw four Kindles the other day. I don't think I've ever seen anybody reading an ebook on an iPad in the wild, out in the street.
Here's the thing, though. As an author, here's what you do. You use Microsoft Word to write a manuscript. You gather together some illustrations or art pictures or something like that. And then you go and you send those to your people who create a physical book. And then you take those same original materials and you go create a Kindle book. And then you take the same original materials and you write a script for an audiobook on audible.com. And then you take the same materials and you do an iBook, and then people can choose it. You know, this is a pretty standard, I mean, it's labor intensive, but it's a standard way that authors will put their book on multiple platforms. And no matter how restrictive the iBooks thing is, it doesn't prevent you from using any or
all.
You
just paste it into the author program just as you would.
And Mike, with all due respect, that's what traditional publishers have been doing for years. And in recent years, they have been screwing authors like me.
Publishers have been screwing authors for decades. This is not a new concept. I mean, I'm not trying to belittle your position, but
they're screwing them up.
Let me finish making my point here. Yeah. One of the things that Mike wrote in a post that I unfortunately only had a chance to read 2 minutes before we went on air was he directed some arguments at me and talked about the significant portion of my income that's coming from books. Sorry, Mike. That's not true anymore.
Yeah.
It used to be true, but it's not true anymore. I make the overwhelming portion of my living now from blogging and from consulting. In ebooks, traditional publishers are screwing authors left and right. And that's right. One of the reasons why my partners and I actually started up a digital first publishing company.
And you're not alone. Almost everybody I talked to, Jerry Pournelle, everybody is looking at doing this. Jerry said this will be the last book that Larry Niven and I write for a publisher. So let's go to the next step. So Mike's supposition is you'll write this book in some form and then paste it into these different formats. Are you saying that Apple's author is so compelling that you'll use those special tools and those special extensions like Keynote, proprietary extensions, to make the best possible version of your book that will deprecate all the others? In other words, is this going to draw you, Ed Bott, into making books for iBook?
No, exactly the opposite. It's going to make
We don't have to worry.
Well, no. Let me see if I can explain what should happen here. First of all, it's not as simple as you write a manuscript in Word, you put the right styles on it, you generate an EPUB, and there you go. There's a great deal of design and tweaking that has to be done to get a Word manuscript or a Pages document.
Okay, but it's a fraction of the total effort that you put into writing the book. It's not.
It's not a fraction of the.
It's not. It's that difficult.
It's a significant amount of the work to get a good looking book. See, here's the difference between fiction and instructional.
Yeah, because you have a lot of screenshots and
doc. There's a great deal. There's a great deal of layout, sidebars, tips. Right. Everything has to be. You know, things read on a traditional Kindle like fiction. It's just words
that
flow down the page.
Right.
Right, that's easy, but for things like textbooks and instructional manuals and anything that has a lot of visuals and has a lot of side elements in it, there's a great deal of production work, the design that goes into it. So the workflow for us would have to be and here's the problem, because Apple's tools will not import an EPUB file. You have to start with a Word file, and then you have to take it into one tool, like Dreamweaver or InDesign, and you have to do a whole bunch of work with it over there, and then you have to duplicate that work over on the iBooks platform in order to have them.
I thought the whole point was to be able to do it right then in their within their system. That's
no,
not
you
the case?
Can't. You can't. The iBooks author tool will not generate a standard EPUB file. It will only generate. Right. So I can't sell. So the only place that I can sell it is on the iBook store. I want to be able to sell my books at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, on my own website, and at the iBook store.
So what's changed then? I mean, it sounds like you're already saying, I write the book and I do significant effort to put it in multiple formats. Are you implying somehow that this tool will keep people from using those other formats? That this is going to somehow become the monopoly tool? I mean, otherwise, Apple's strategy doesn't work, right?
You're worried that people will want to use that system, right?
And only that system.
And that they won't be able to go anywhere else. That's the whole point, correct?
That's correct. You can't export to a standard format, and you can't import from a standard format. And so especially for the small publishers who don't have the luxury of being able to double their work to make two different formats, they're going to have to choose, do we want to do the interactive iBooks?
It's so sexy, and Apple's made it so good that they'll choose that over the other more open formats?
I have no idea. My initial experience with it wasn't all that positive,
that's the only way it works is if publishers say, oh, good, iBook, forget these other guys.
I mean, there are two things going on. First of all, Ed's project is trying to solve a similar problem, and it's a great, approach.
Oh, so you're making a tool, Ed.
We publish our own books. We're not selling a tool.
Okay.
We have our own system.
What's cool about your proposal to authors is you get 50% as an author, and the rest of the cost is all the editing and design and all that stuff. And that's an appealing, simplified model. If you try to do a Kindle book or you work with Amazon for print books, it's very complicated. The royalty scheme is very muddled, and you get screwed in the end. And I like that approach of making it really simple and giving authors a lot of half the money. I mean, that's a huge amount. And Apple's kind of trying to do the same thing. They're trying to have a simple, and Apple doesn't want you to go and make multiple versions.
Right.
Believe me,
obviously,
they want you to use one version.
They want you to make an iBook.
But the real thing you get, in addition to a simplified thing and 70% of the revenue as an author, assuming you do all the design work yourself, is the channel. I mean, you get the tablet sphere.
Right.
You get the right. iPad world, and that's the powerful.
Just to take this a little outside baseball rather than inside baseball, does anyone other than me find it, and as I have a four-year-old about to start kindergarten, the situation of our relatively well-funded school district is a mess. Anybody other than me find it difficult to see iPads actually being adopted other than in really expensive private universities?
One of the things I was surprised Apple didn't announce any program to seed schools with. I mean, they have educational programs already, but I would have thought that would have been the fourth and final part of this announcement is, and we're going to make it possible for every school to have an iPad.
Well, right. I mean, I partially bring this up because I got...
Well, yeah, it's too expensive, I guess.
Well, I got one of the funniest, and this is almost a decade ago, one of the funniest... PR pitches I ever got was this incredibly adamant person from the education department inside of sort of the PR department that was handling education inside of Apple. And this is a long time ago, but they had donated a classroom full of computers in New York City. I said, "That's great." She's like, "It's going to change everything." I'm like, "Ma'am, are you familiar with the New York City school district?" She's like, "No." I'm like, I worked in the New York City school district. One in every eight residents of New York City, the five boroughs, is in the New York City school district. That's approximately 1.1 million students. I think it is commendable that you donated 24 computers to a classroom, but this is not going to change.
That's a lot of students.
You know, the New York City public school system.
Let me ask you this, Ed, because this is really the fundamental question. You're saying the government should intervene. Do you think that market forces are not enough to make sure that this... You know, I mean, is the market going to say, oh, iBooks, we're all going to do it, and that's that?
No, obviously not. I mean, Apple would like it to be that way. But here's actually what I'd really like to see, and this is what I wrote at the end of the post that I published today. In a truly fair competitive marketplace, what Apple should be doing is they should be saying, we believe we have a product with our iBooks 2 format that is better, more interesting, and more compelling than a standard plain vanilla ebook. So if they had created their tool so that you could create your standard you create your Word file or your page file, import it, and then output two files. One is a standard EPUB file, which you could sell anywhere you wanted. The other would be an iTunes or an iBook 2.0 file, which could only be sold on the iBook store.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
At the same price, then the marketplace really and truly would have an opportunity to decide. And under those circumstances, if I had an iPad and I had a choice between buying my static plain vanilla book from Amazon, or for the exact same price, one that has interactive multimedia content from Apple, I would be very tempted to buy Apple's product.
Now, I have to say, Pages, Apple's word processor, I believe, let me just pull up something here, does save out as EPUB 3. So maybe Apple is giving you that choice. Maybe you create it in Pages. Now you've got EPUB 3. And then you can then import it into Author and do Apple EPUB 3. Would that be adequate to you? I mean, see, there it is. There's EPUB. I can save as an EPUB document that can be read in eBooks. It is that lower format compatible EPUB that doesn't have all those extra features.
There you go. And you see, this is where this might be fine for the self-publisher, but for a professional publisher, there's a lot of work that we have to do to get, you know, the output from that file is a good start.
Well, you're going to have kind of the same problem if you do it in Author, because there's a lot of work. I mean, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to create a dumbed-down format and a full format automatically. That's a lot of work, too, right? I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know if a program could even do that. I think Apple is going to come back to you. Let me be Mr. Apple. Hi.
Okay.
I'm going to come back to you and say, well, Mr. Bot, we do have a program that'll let you create those fine standard EPUB documents. It's called Pages. It's $40. We make that available to you. And if you want to have a more elaborate thing, you can create it in Pages and then export it into Author. And then now you can have the higher standard. Now we give you the best of both worlds. What's wrong with that?
Again, because the output, I haven't tested the output of Pages, but I would be shocked if it were any better. I mean, you can get the same output from a Word file and you know, with a few macros, turn it into an EPUB file. You then need to do a lot of work to get it into a true ebook format.
So you're saying Apple is really kind of, by creating this a really spectacularly good tool, they're coercing people and then making a EULA around it that says, by the way, you can only make stuff for us. They're coercing people by saying, look, here's a really shiny, lovely tool. Use this. And be part of our universe.
Well, and especially, you know, if they hadn't started from day one bragging about how the EPUB format is iBooks, how the industry-leading EPUB format is.
And as you
iBooks.
Point out in your article, Apple does have a way of doing this. They did it with FaceTime.
They said nobody reads until they had an iBooks, and then all of a sudden people were reading again.
Apple lies. Yeah. I think that's
And don't forget that the EPUB format also works on as a native format on most Android devices. So cutting the EPUB format off at the knees also does a good job of subverting things with Google as well.
Well, what's good for Apple
and the Android community
is good for America.
And China.
Keep in mind that we are really at the beginning stages of self-publishers and ebooks. And so, I mean, I think he's doing a very good thing by bringing to light the concerns of a you know, professional author. So I know the chat room is kind of going a little crazy in terms of, like, what does this mean to them? But I think it's a good discussion, but we are still in the beginning stages. I think we have a lot of room to grow.
What if a lot of these people in the chat room are amateurs who create wonderful iBook? I mean, I would like, for instance, the first thing I think when I saw Author was, oh, I could now make a book that tells how we built the studio with video in it and graphics and diagrams and text and audio. And it can make this rich book that I've always wanted to make. And I can give it away, or maybe I could charge a couple of bucks, put it on the iBook store. And I think if I'm Apple, I think, don't you want more of that and less of the professionals? Or maybe not?
And the only place where you can read that is on the iPad.
Right. It sells iPads.
I don't think
isn't
Apple
in the iPad business?
Apple is in the content creation and consumption business. And essentially, this is an attack on Amazon. Amazon
and Google
decided to be a competitor to iTunes to offer downloadable movies. And then they came out with a tablet so that you could use all the it's exactly in Apple's business model. And this is Apple, the Empire Strikes Back, where essentially what they're doing is they're starting with the educational market. Forget about paper books. That's the past. They're competing with Amazon for the
future.
Let's
start over. Yeah.
And for publishers for the disintermediation business, the writers who want to connect with the readers through Apple. Many of those writers, by the way, start with Macs, and many of those readers are using iPads or will in the future. And Apple essentially wants to control it because it's content. Everything that's content, Apple wants to control it just like they did music and iTunes. That's what the company does.
Right.
They do it with hardware. They do it with app stores. They do it with all these things. But this is, you know, books are content, and Apple considers that to be their primary business.
Well, we can't let them do that. So the best solution is for Amazon to create an authoring tool and Google to create an authoring tool. Would that solve the problem, Ed? What I don't want to do is get the government involved. I just don't think the DOJ is the right person to solve this problem.
No, I wish they had created a truly competitive tool, something that would...
But it's not in their interest.
It would increase... Of course it's not in their interest, but it would be in my interest. What I see happening...
When you run Apple, you can do that.
In my interest as a reader and in my interest as a consumer, in your interest,
I agree, and I'm completely with you on that. The good news is there are other open source tools. There's Calibre. There are some tools out there. And I think we as readers should be very cognizant of the fact that Apple essentially wants to co-op a very good format, the EPUB format, and make it proprietary, make it their own.
It's also funny that we're having this. I mean, I was mocked soundly by three members of the panel when I'm like, I still buy CDs. I own a physical copy.
I still mock you.
It's the most raw form of the music I can get, and I don't have to worry about being shut down or losing access to it or my monthly fee going away or the company I go with losing their licensing or something. And it's like, and here we are having this conversation kind of poo-pooing whether or not, you know, because the idea of like as a college student, it would suck to have your textbooks locked down to an iPad.
I keep all my music and all my textbooks on megauploads.com. I know where they are.
That worked out for you.
Let's talk about that in just a second. We got a great panel and
nice
some great
segue.
Conversations. I want to find out why Ed Bott's never going back to CES. I want to find out whether we won in SOPA or whether that was just the first battle and actually here comes ACTA, the cavalry. Yeah. We can talk about Chris Dodd of the Motion Picture Association of America. There's a lot to talk about. And Mega Upload is one of them. We will do all of that in just a moment. But first, let's say hello to our friends at Ford. You can see, actually, if you look out the window, can you see my Mustang parked right out there, right out front? Ooh. Say goodbye to the gasoline engine in my Mustang, because I'm going all electric, baby. So is Ford. I'm very excited about it. If you go to Ford.com/technology, you can learn a lot about what Ford is up to with their state-of-the-art 21st century vehicles. And one of the things Ford's working hard on, I know you, Patrick, you were and I were there at that dinner with Alan Mulally. He said a very interesting thing. Somebody asked him, well, did you miss the boat? You know, Nissan and others have come out with electric vehicles. Where's Ford?
They're like, we're giving consumers the choice by offering gas engines, turbocharged gas engines, diesel engines, electric engines, hybrid technology, and offering them in the cars so that people can choose whatever engine they want.
All the same assembly line.
I would like all of them, please.
Yeah, exactly. It's brilliant. Ford's decided to do a more global strategy with all their vehicles. And as a result, you're now just starting to see the 2012 electric Focus. It's you can get it on the reservation list, as I am right now. Next year, the 2013 C-Max Energy plug-in hybrid. But essentially, as time goes by, you're going to see plug-in hybrids, hybrids, electric, diesel, and gas. I don't know about diesel in the U.S. We asked about diesel. He said, well, the regulatory situation here makes it tough to...
Actually, mostly...
And prices.
Oltmobile ruined diesel for consumer cars in the United States. It's just depressing.
And diesel's not cheaper here either, which is another
issue. No, but you get... Speaking of inside baseball conversations, I can talk for two hours on diesel.
I know. I don't want to get you started on cars. I'm excited, and now I'm looking at this plug-in hybrid, because, you know, the idea is you plug it in, you charge it up. You've got a limited range, like 15 miles, but if you're just bopping around town, you use zero gas.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the range when you need it. If you have to go to San Francisco, I have the range to do it. It's kind of the best of both worlds. And they're also, this is also, now you're starting to see the strategy come together. This guy is a strategist. Now you see why Sync and My Ford Touch were so important, why the App Link is so important, because now you see apps on your smartphone that manage the recharge process. In car, you can determine the most eco-friendly driving route, you know, fastest, shortest, or least energy consumed. You can remotely control the vehicle charge. You can even make sure the vehicle only charges during the lowest utility rate hours. Maximize efficiency, monitor the state of charge. All of this using Sync and My Ford Touch. It's just brilliant. And the My Ford mobile smartphone app. So there really is a whole strategy here. And also, of course, the thing I like about the Focus charges in 3 to 4 hours if you get the Leviton home charging station, the 240-volt station. So I get home, I plug it in. 3 or 4 hours later, I'm out and driving around. Zero emissions, 100% electric for the Ford Focus Electric. They use lithium ion. You can top it off. That's nice. So it's not... You don't have to wait till I've driven. I don't have to drive around the block a few times to discharge the battery. You just top it off. And then next year, the C-Max Energy plug-in hybrid. I'm just excited about this. Find out more at Ford.com/technology. Get on the list for your Ford Focus Electric. Go to your Ford dealer and drive one. You will love it. And, of course, Ford.com/technology to find out how a car company like Ford has become a 21st century car company. I just think it's so exciting.
I wish Apple would license their technology, because that's better battery life and charging time than my iPhone 4S.
I know. Well, you realize, of course, it's Microsoft card and the base operating system there. I imagine that Google and Apple all are eyeing this telematics space as a real opportunity. Yeah. I don't know. There is Linux in some vehicles, right?
some cars are using.
There's a lot of operating systems in
for cars. Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I thought it was funny at CES. I'm looking at the Samsung. It has a camera on top.
Right.
It recognizes when you come in, knows who, you know, Patrick's settings are different than my settings. Right. You can gesture at it. You can talk to it. And it's got dual core processors. The thing is a PC.
Mm-hmm.
What operating system? You said that everybody's proprietary now on these apps. Callie, I think you were saying that.
Callie was saying that.
Is there any standard across? No, everybody's different.
Yeah, everyone's using their own thing. And it's very frustrating for, I think, every consumer out there. But it seems like, you know, companies are definitely moving that direction. And I'm not sure that they're going to stop, regardless of what we think.
You know what I thought was interesting? Samsung, I don't know. Ford was talking about this, too.
Right.
We're so used to upgrading our phones and our computers, like, on a regular basis, like yearly. And durable goods like TVs and cars are realizing that consumers want an upgrade. They don't want to buy a new TV or car every year, but they want to upgrade. Samsung has a module on their TVs. Or is it LG? It might be LG that was doing this. You unplug...
It was Samsung.
It was Samsung.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a new processor, a new... scaler, well, new software, and you just upgrade the TV.
There's kind of a different issue. So television sales, average television lasted in an American home for 11 years.
Yeah.
Right?
That's changed.
And then HDTVs came out, and then there was the mess of the competing standards, and early adopters kind of got hosed, and it settles in on 1080p, and all of a sudden, it goes from the average household having, you know, a television for 11 years to two HDTVs inside of like 4 years to, okay, all of a sudden the HDTV adoption rate is starting to slow it down as everybody's getting 1080p. 1080p televisions are getting cheap. People have put them in a couple rooms in the house and they're kind of done. And so
that's the problem. We saturated the market.
Consumer electronics,
you can't stop buying.
We've got 3D. You're going to watch blue people in 3D. It'll change everything.
No, I don't want
3D. Now 8K TV.
We'll bring gestures. How about gestures?
I don't want that. What else you got?
Well, how about this thing so you can watch Netflix in 1080p?
No, I don't want that.
There's special glasses so the 3D is actually 2D because nobody likes 3D.
I like my TV. I don't want OLED. Oh, I'll take that.
Well, sure.
I'll take that.
You can afford it. The rest of us will wait 2 years.
How much? Oh, never mind. So, Callie, you're right. We saw 4K and 8K.
Yeah. I mean,
not that there's anything
Sharp,
you can.
Right? They was announcing their new 8K TV, and geez, we haven't even seen 4K. They're already making me frustrated with 4K.
They had to get Nippon Television NHK to record special 8K.
But
content.
Don't you remember like 3 or 4 years or 6 years of CES where you were like, oh yeah, 4K. And there were more Soaring Ego demos. There would be like these amazing HDTV demos of Soaring Eagles, and you'd look at like the individual hairs on the, and you'd be sitting there staring. And this year it was like Robert Hare was like, yeah, I sat down and looked at an 8K. Project for JVC and I stared at it from like 4 millimeters away and it was amazing and I want 4K content in my house. And it's like, well, what about, it's an 8K. It's like, yeah, well, okay, so the Wizard of Oz has been scanned in 8K. That's one.
Film is high resolution.
Some. Film itself
Wizard
is high resolution.
Wizard of Oz is 1939.
Yeah, but it was film. Film itself captures more data than we've had.
We just redigitize all those classics.
Because they've done such a good job getting them on the Blu-ray. You know what I mean? It took 5 years to get Blu-ray up to speed. Let's move everybody. Perfect. Leo, we're all going to have to buy 4K TVs. You are making the Consumer Electronics Association happy right now.
I don't want one of those. Thank you very much.
Yeah, until you see one, then you're going to own two. And then the prices can drop and the rest of us can buy it.
Because it's hard to describe 4K TV. It's such a gorgeous thing. I mean, even if you can't tell, which a lot of people can't, the difference between 720 and 1080, you can absolutely tell the difference between 720 or 1080 and 4K.
It's like looking through a window.
It's like
55-inch retinal display is what it is. Yeah.
But the truth is the only person who will look good on a 4K TV is Callie Lewis. The rest of us, you do not want to see at that kind of resolution. So, Edbot, why are you not going back to CES ever again? By the way, every one of us says that every year.
No.
I never said never again. I said I'm not going back next year.
Why not?
Oh, well, you know, because the whole CES experience is so noisy and the timing is such that most of the exhibitors are showing either stuff that they introduced sometime in the last 6 months or stuff that they may or may not actually ship in the next 6 months to 6 years. And there's almost no current news value to it.
That's part of the beauty of CES. Come on. I mean, it's all about getting to see where the future of technology is going.
And just remember, Callie is 20 years younger than us. Remember 20 years ago how you felt about Comdex? That's how Callie feels.
Well, you know, I went to my first CES in 1979.
Yeah. We're old and jaded. That's the problem.
I wasn't even born then.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, I think it's a great way to get a snapshot of the industry. You got hordes, you know, there were 50 people from CNET who were there fanned out gathering everything. So I plan next year to be
just watch CNET.
On a beach in Hawaii with a notebook and Wi-Fi, checking as someone curates it for me.
That's what Dvorak and Pornell and everybody, all us old farts say, we'll let Callie do it and we'll watch. You, Callie, go. You're young.
I will be happy to serve them.
I know. Actually, it was scary there when you saw The Verge had 35 people and Gadget had 35 people, CNET had 50 people. I felt like, how can we cover this in a way that is going to be different and unique? It is a little bit of a challenge.
Well, your coverage of the press event on Sunday was exactly like being at the press event. I mean,
I wouldn't know. They didn't let me in.
It was just, I mean, just walking around in the booth.
Feel bad, Leo. I couldn't get in either.
No, but that was what we decided we wanted to do was to simulate the experience of actually being there. Try to be coherent, cogent, informational.
Well,
just give you the raw experience.
If you could simulate the experience of drinking free alcohol and eating shrimp, that would be ideal.
Well, you'll have to provide your own alcohol and shrimp.
That's expensive.
And
where was all of that? I didn't see any of it.
Callie, you were just stuck in a booth somewhere probably working. Anyway, we love doing it, but it is a little overcovered these days, isn't it? I mean, it's just everybody
still there. All of us still moved unbelievable numbers of page views or
that's true.
Ridiculous numbers
people,
of videos.
People more. Well, I guess that's true that just as there are more people covering it, there are more people interested in it. So.
I mean, the audience. I mean, you know, we had huge views. You know, I think we posted 35 or 40 videos for Techzilla.
Holy cow!
Callie, you know, you guys did another 300 videos.
51.
You know, and then we also had Soldier Knows Best, and Ty was down there, and the Techno Buffalo, and everybody's getting huge numbers.
The Techno Buffalo and Soldier Knows Best were there. Oh no, wow. I'm in trouble now. Who the hell's that?
Well, these are people. Okay, first of all, thank you for dissing some of my partners at Revision 3.
Those are Revision 3 shows.
These are YouTube people. These are people who publish primarily on YouTube are partnered with Revision 3.
But they probably much bigger than ours. Although I have to say, I think a YouTube audience of a million is a little deceptive.
Well,
because it's like 12, 12-year-olds who watch it over and over or something.
Guess who's got the highest per capita percentage of disposable income to drop on new shiny
12-year-olds?
Yep.
That's scary.
12 to 20-year-olds. Huh. They don't have ex-wives. They don't have mortgages. They don't have car payments. They don't have responsibility. They can go wearing the same pair of jeans for 3 weeks if they want to, if they're that slovenly, and they can spend it all on ringtones and new phones. They are the ideal consumer.
Companies want to create loyal customers going for that young market, of course, rather than people who've been around for a while.
Everybody in our chat room knows who Techno... What is it? Techno Buffalo?
Techno Buffalo.
They know who he is in Soldier, and they all know, and they're going, oh, Leo, you're just so out of it, man. So let's talk about McGowplode. and what's his name? Kim.com?
Kim.com.
Kim.com.
Is that the Kim Jong-il of the file trading set?
Oh, man.
I believe it is.
This is his third name.
Except he's three times taller than Kim Jong-il.
Wouldn't be hard.
He's 6'7" and weighs 300 pounds. He's a gigantic human being.
Holy moly. The day we celebrated victory, Wednesday, over SOPA and PIPA, 29 members of Congress were recanted. Eventually, both sponsors of the House and Senate bill pulled the bills off the table, said, all right, you internet creeps win. But the very next day, what happens? The feds come down hard on MegaUpload.com.
Yeah, this is interesting. There's look, we all want
piracy stop. We don't want counterfeit brake pads causing my truck to fly into a tree at 300 miles an hour. We all
that just
want
sounds
people-
awesome.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Wow. I hadn't really thought about that.
Be sure to make
that.
A video of that.
It's going to go huge on the YouTube.
But it's
interesting. While everybody's making this huge fura, Google's blacked out their logo. Wikipedia is down. 1,000 other sites participated by going down.
We went black and white that day. That was fun. We should just do that from now on. It just looks noir. It's good.
You should all start smoking cigarettes. And
it's like the
scotch.
Mad Men.
Right. The problem is, in the outside of Mad Men in the 21st century, smoking cigarettes is the number one indicator that you're a bad guy in modern drama. So, yeah.
Or using a Windows computer.
But literally, like while soap is being battled over, they're making arrests on like multiple continents. Like a German national living in New Zealand is being taken down by the New Zealand police for extradition to the United States. Yep. Based on a file uploading service, which had lots and lots of legitimate users, but IP holder's claim was primarily used for violating copyright. And what it seems to come down to is the more you dig into this, the more it comes down to is they got into their communications, found them acknowledging that there were really good ways to take advantage of this to get all the television shows they wanted to watch, and that became the core of a multinational operation, absolutely phenomenally huge operation to take mega upload offline.
Yeah, Kim.com
How long
is
they been working
the.
On this? Do you know?
I haven't quite figured out.
Must
I'm going to say
a long
months.
Time. Apparently, .com barricaded himself in his mansion's safe room. He had a hidey hole.
And a shotgun
and a sawed-off shotgun.
Okay. First of all, this is a really wonderful Yahoo title that's pulling a lot of views. And is I got to say, I have met some people of wealth. Some of them travel around with gigantic ex-Marines. Yeah. Some of them have safe holes in their houses.
If I had 18 luxury vehicles worth $4.8 million. Including several Mercedes, a 2012 Maserati, and a 2008 Rolls-Royce Phantom Drophead Coupe, and a 1959 pink Cadillac
convertible.
I saw that being towed away from the compound.
License plates including God, Mafia, Stoned, CEO, Good, Evil, Hacker.
And police.
Anybody who will legally...
There was one that said police.
Now, here's the thing. He's the Muammar Gaddafi of...
No
file sharers. He's a bigger than life character. They what they say that they have is evidence that not only did he and his fellow German and Dutch runners of the company know there was illegal file sharing
they
going
celebrated
on. They were
it.
Doing it.
Yeah.
They were
yeah.
saying, "Hey, can you get me this TV series? Oh yeah, let me go grab it from over here on Mega Uploads in here."
There's an email smoking gun apparently.
Yes.
And
yeah, yeah. So this is a ridiculously poorly run business. There's all kinds of shady things about the site itself. You can't search it. There's no archive or index.
Apparently,
or anything
they
like that.
Can search it, but you can't
can,
search
exactly.
it.
Well, you could say the same thing for many file services
well,
out there.
Yeah, but the
mean,
difference.
So given the information that's come out about their interest in it and them using it themselves. So are we saying basically that YouCendit and other file sharing services aren't really at risk?
Well, I think they are, in fact.
Because I think that was the concern originally.
Didn't two sites pull themselves down today? Well, there's a couple of issues.
Right.
One is a lot of people complaining on Twitter, hey, I didn't use it for piracy. I used megaupload.com to store my work files. What do I do now?
Right,
because they're gone.
All legitimate people had stuff just disappear.
Yeah.
Which
and
is not fair
FileSonic, if you go there now, says all sharing functionality is disabled. Our service can only be used to upload and retrieve files that you have uploaded personally. If I were you, I probably wouldn't use FileSonic right now. That's not the only one. Uploaded.to. is no longer available for use in the U.S.
Oh, jeez.
Well, if I were them, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think that they were trying to make an example out of somebody who looks really bad. The guy has a long history of shady hacking,
this
of
was
hacking
easy,
government sites.
This was an
time.
Easy...
Exactly. Yeah. And once they nail this guy, then they can go to the next company and say, well, you guys are just like megauploads.com, and that was acceptable, so now... this should be acceptable. And
that also assumes
that they get it through the either he plea right. bargains or they get it through the courts and it upholds and they consider this because there's a lot, you know,
it's not illegal to be eccentric, to be big, to be broad. They've got to prove that because they had a DMCA takedown
right.
system.
Yep.
They got to prove that these guys knowingly flouted mm-hmm. it.
This is not a slam dunk.
However, the message has clearly been sent.
Right. But like so many of these cases, it's all about harvesting email because, and the bigger the company, the more this works. But you can, if you can get your hands on email, which you always can in these cases, and just search it and data mine it, you can always find anything you're looking for just about. Somebody said something. Somebody was drinking and typed some email and said something, and they bring it into court and say, "Hey, look, you know that there's this proof right. that they are
smoking
a bunch of sleazebags." Yeah.
Now I didn't know. Have any of you used Mega Upload? Because I had never used it. I'm sure everybody in our chat room uses it. Apparently, according to
some of the people in my office have, but I haven't.
According to Ars Technica, more data, more file downloading, or more bandwidth was used. Corporate business bandwidth is used by Mega Upload than Dropbox.
Well, but it's interesting. There's a company that does kind of third-party analysis of some open gateways, and they were looking
at Palo Alto Networks,
and they were looking at sort of Box.net versus Dropbox versus Mega Upload, and it's kind of funny. They're like, there's like, you know, in the same. There should be some actual specific listing, but the numbers are like hysterical. Yeah, business focused Box.net, 86 gigabytes. 11,573 gigabytes for Dropbox going through the gateway, 20,405 gigabytes from Mega Upload.
Wow.
Roughly 50% of the networks that have...
Wait a minute. So Box.net, in terms of bandwidth, Box.net, 86 gigabytes.
Gigabytes.
Mega Upload, 20,405
right.
gigabytes.
And this is like basically... Mega Upload, it's a line right there.
This is
article.
All business traffic, by the way. This is not consumers.
Yeah. 57% of the 1,636 organizations in the study, 57% of them had Mega Upload traffic.
Here's the reason. The bigger the file and the longer you want it to be available, the better Mega Uploads is.
Okay.
Because exactly. you can leave it up for, you can have upload a gigantic right. file and leave it up for 6 months, and it's available with a URL.
Now, I'd love to see a study that says how much of Mega Upload's content was pirated content.
Right.
By the way, one of the examples they gave of the internal search, one of the executives sent an email saying, "I'd like some episodes of Seinfeld." Now, admittedly, the people who own Seinfeld have the right to say, "I don't want Seinfeld on Mega Upload." But honestly, can you prove any financial damage to the fact that Seinfeld is on Mega Upload?
But that proves that they knew that it was available on
right.
Mega Upload.
It's a smoking gun, I understand.
Because using it demonstrates they knew it was there, and they can also demonstrate they didn't take it down when they found out it was there.
Of the top 20 file downloads found on December 5th, 2011 by Palo Alto, 6 of the files were software applications pirated.
Mm-hmm.
8 were games or game demos. Again, demos would be legal, but games would not.
Well, you're assuming.
6 were movie trailers. Not one was a television show, movie. Mm. I'm not sure. Are these really... I mean, admittedly, they look like bad guys.
Yeah.
But are they really bad guys? Are they really so very different than Box.net or Dropbox? And who's next? I understand why these other sites are shutting themselves down.
Well, there's Mega Upload and there's RapidShare. There's another mm-hmm. company that's
in there. I've seen stuff on them, yeah.
Yeah, and I think maybe, one difference between Box... I think they're Box.com now, by the way. They finally got that domain.
Good. Are they really?
They finally bought that. So Box and Dropbox are shifting a lot of small files, a lot of Word documents, a lot of Excel spreadsheets and stuff, all the legit stuff. That's what they're about, is sharing a folder full of constantly updated stuff with other people.
That's how I use Dropbox.
Mega Upload and RapidShare is how, and I've used them for this before, is when somebody's email provider won't allow an attachment above a certain size, you go, okay, I'm just going to put it over here and you can get it.
You send it, same thing.
Yep. Yeah, you do something like that.
Yeah,
and a lot of that stuff is perfectly innocent. It's just people working around restrictions of mail clients. So, that's interesting data that they came up with, I'm not sure that it's really all that conclusive about much.
Right. Somebody in the chat room said, and this is a good point, that the way a site like Mega Upload would make money off piracy is they would pay people to put pirated stuff on there, reward them somehow, and then charge people to get the pirated stuff. In other words, you need transactions. Apparently, Mega Upload hasn't done that in months.
In months? They used to?
This is from Beatmaster. The way it works for pirates usually is a profit system that gives uploaders dollars for the amount of downloads. Mega Upload dropped that months ago. Won't now, matter. Admittedly,
about
this...
About the time that the
investigation, maybe.
Yeah, won't matter in court.
And starting to
won't
shut
matter
down.
In court. Won't matter in court.
Did they have the premium membership thing that a lot of these services do, where it's free, but you have to wait 30 or 60 seconds before your download will start?
Right.
But if you buy the premium membership, right, you get a faster rate and you don't have to wait.
Right.
I remember seeing that a lot.
Yes, according to the chat room, apparently quite a few of whom use it.
Yep.
For completely legitimate purposes. It did do that.
Seinfeld.
I guess the other question is, if this, look at this, it worked. What do we need SOPA and PIPA for?
We don't.
They got tools. It worked. They got them.
Yeah.
Do we need anything better than that? New Zealand cooperated. I guess what we need it for is if Kim had been smart enough to be located in North Korea with his brother, then this wouldn't have been a problem. Right? That was what, because we were.
I don't think Kim's lifestyle is going to roll very well in North Korea.
But we have extradition arrangements with New Zealand. He should have gone somewhere we didn't. Venezuela, Hugo Chavez probably would welcome the guy. Yeah. Right, come on in.
He has citizenship all over the place and residency in Hong Kong. And,
oh, so yeah, he just happened to go somewhere where we could get.
Well, his family lives in the family compound in New Zealand, which is apparently one of the most expensive homes in New Zealand.
Oh, that's neat. I mean, not
it's
neat,
worth,
but.
It's worth like $35 million, something like that. Yeah, it's huge.
Okay.
But I think it does underscore, you know, at this point. So I think the NPA and the RIA, you know, Chris Dodd, I guess, turns around and says, well, you know, we can't get this extraordinary level of cooperation between the Department of Justice, the FBI, and our international partners in the battle
Chris
against piracy.
Dodd.
Give us the tactical nuke. Give us the ability to... Because it's...
Chris Dodd was on Fox. Now, Christopher Dodd, senator from Connecticut for a long time. Now
he's
CEO.
Cashing in.
It's, yeah, this is what you do in Washington. Yep. You serve the people for a certain number of years. Then you go down to K Street, you open an office, and you make a big bunch of money as a lobbyist.
Then you serve the people on a silver platter to Congress.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
But Mr. Dodd cannot directly lobby Congress for 2 years. After the end of his election. So instead, he basically says, if you guys don't vote the way we want you to vote on SOPA or PIPA or anything else, we delete expletive introduce in Congress. We're not going to donate any money to your campaign funds.
Now, this is not illegal. This is how it works in this country. So he's the chairman and CEO of the Motion Picture Association of America, that wonderful group that Jack Valenti used to head. Jack Valenti was a guy who went in front of Congress who said, the VCR is to television what the Boston Strangler is to a woman home alone at night.
Valenti was always keeping it classy and real.
Chris, well, they found a good successor. This is Chris Dodd says, those...
Don't do it, Leo.
Those
don't
who count
do it.
On support.
Don't do it, Leo.
Those who
don't
count,
do it.
Those who count on, quote, Hollywood for support need to understand... This industry is watching very carefully who's going to stand up for them when their job is at stake. And this is my favorite part. Don't ask me to write a check for you when you think your job is at risk. In other words, when you're up for re-election. And then don't pay any attention to me when my job is at stake. You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding, and you at... No, I'm sorry. That's another quote. That's another movie. But this guy, this is... You couldn't get more blatant. And it's not illegal, because that's how it works.
Welcome to America.
But even the mafia wouldn't say that out loud.
On the internet before?
Well,
I mean, has he even done email on the internet before?
I think he thought, oh, I'm on Fox News. I can say this. It'll never go anywhere. I don't know what he thought. And now, by the way, there's a petition. I'm reading this from the White House petition site, We the People, petitioning the Obama administration to investigate Chris Dodd and the Motion Picture Association of America for bribery. After
bribery?
Bribery after he publicly admitted to bribing politicians to pass legislation. 10,000 signatures so far.
Well, folks, that's going to get campaign financing fixed in an election year. 10,000 glorious signatures.
You only need 14,000 more by February 20th. Folks, let's see if we can get
to reach a goal of 20,000? That's going to change campaign financing in an election
year.
You're
right. All it says is to reach a goal.
That's kind
of funny. It doesn't say anything will happen.
Yeah.
But this is about publicity. I would love to get the people who would support the Chris Dodds of the world to explain to us the difference between
bribery.
Isn't bribery. Bribery is when you give money to a congressman and he does favors for you. That's bribery. This is different.
Since Leo and I once used the word extortion in discussing the operation of a group of lawyers in some part of the country and nearly ended up spending a lot of quality time with lawyers that would have cost us a lot of money.
Let's step away from the bribery word. Told me not to say that.
Don't ever say that again. But let's be blatant. This is part of, the Supreme Court recently decided that, hey, corporations can spend as much money they want influencing elections if they do it in this way. We watched Colbert and sorry, I'm still seeing the whole
Herman Cain.
Oh my goodness.
By the way, how many votes did Colbert Cain get in the election on Saturday? Do we know?
Mm-mm.
Would have been funny if they'd beaten somebody, like they came in third. That would have been funny, I guess we would have seen.
Huntsman's gone.
This isn't bribery. This is the way it works. This is called campaign contribution.
Hey, look.
But
you know,
it's a threat of some sorts.
Yeah, no, we're talking. We're also, this is the same thing we run into. AT&T and Verizon combined spent $11 million.
But they never do this.
Lobbying.
I know, but they never go on TV and say, hey, we gave you good money.
The problem is.
And now you don't vote for us? What the hell?
The problem is Chris Dodd is used to being a grandstanding senator relatively, can basically say anything he wants to anybody he wants with pretty much no repercussions.
He ain't a senator anymore.
He technically can't be a lobbyist. But he is very publicly, he's doing stuff you don't do as a lobbyist.
So he's still within the 2-year frame of
last
office?
I checked.
So he's not a lobbyist. He just writes checks to members of Congress.
He's a spokesperson or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It's messy at best, it's ugly at worst.
I think this is depressing. This is a wake up call and I think we all deserve a pat on the back. I think what Wikipedia did, what Reddit did, it started with Reddit on Wednesday, showed Congress that we care, and they responded. And I think we all deserve a pat on the back for standing up, but it's not done yet.
No.
Now we've got ACTA, which is going to be completely secret and is what they call plurilateral. I'd never heard that before, but it's an agreement from all nations to do the same thing, basically.
But Congress itself will take the various provisions of this and they'll bury it in various things.
Right.
It ain't over. They're not saying we screwed up, we're doing something that's bad. They say we screwed up, we didn't hide this in a way that would, raise any suspicions.
Well, they said, we'll come back and do it in a way that doesn't upset you.
Yep. but also, in other words,
in secret.
But the people who are technically savvy, who are also savvy about the way life inside the Beltway works, the Washington way, are like, look, this is a long game. And it's time for somebody other than the EFF. It's time for all of these companies. If you sit down and take a look at the amount of money that Microsoft has, that Google has, that all of these huge organizations that are depending on the internet for their livelihood, all they need to do is sit down, put down a little four-letter, group that can sit inside and write campaign checks, and all of a sudden the internet has a legitimate voice in Congress and the business model is preserved. It's in Google's interest alone to legislate the hell out of this and start stomping on this.
Well, and they do have a PAC, and Eric Schmidt's in Congress, but I think, they're new to Congress. They don't have the connections that a Chris Dodd has, and they probably don't have the ears of as many members of Congress.
The other thing is that there are other – this is a good issue for the internet to throw its weight around and get something – get Congress to do something they didn't want to do. But this is an unusual event because it's bipartisan. Both the opposition and the proponents were on both sides of the aisle.
Right.
And this is something that affected internet users directly. I can't see something like this forming over some – human rights issue somewhere or something.
Sadly,
everybody's
right.
like, well, this affects me, and therefore right. I'm outraged and, right. and so on. And so this is
not
a rare
be
event.
Able to download from Mega Upload if this goes through.
And there was also companies on both sides. There are some issues on which all the companies are on one side and the people right. who are not companies are on the other. And in those cases, we can't rely on Microsoft writing checks or whatever. What we need is campaign. I mean, I don't want to make this a political show, but we need to illegalize this kind of stuff that isn't bribery.
That's what Larry Lessig decided. Instead of, Larry's the former Stanford law professor. He's now yep. back at Harvard Law School, right. who created Creative Commons, has been very active in IP reform, and yep. finally he gave up. And he said, you know, nothing's going to get fixed until we have campaign finance reform. Yep. And that's what he's campaigning on. So I think it's a political discussion, but it's where we have to go if we want to yep. change right. these things. We have to get that, go down that rabbit hole. Ed, you haven't said anything. You got any thoughts? You live in Albuquerque. It's different there, isn't it?
Santa Fe. To be more precise. Yes. God, the politics of the Wild West here, you don't even want to know. The campaign finance is a mess, top to bottom in this country. And I despair that it will be fixed in our lifetime.
Somebody's giving us this link just if you want to follow more on this, rootstrikers.org, if you want to find out more about what's going on. And apparently is this Larry Lessig's group, or is this a group that he supports? Anyway, there's a place you can go. There are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root, said Henry David Thoreau. So we've been hacking at the branches. Let's hit the root. What do you say? We're going to take a break, come back with more. Great panel. Callie Lewis is here from Livid Lobster, geekbeat.tv. Things are going good for you, Callie. You got now a network. You've got a lot of people.
Yeah, we Livid Lobster is our parent company, and under that we do Geek Beat and Geek Beat Live, which is a weekly show that's also broadcast on TV. And we have a core team of about 10 people here, and about 40 bloggers around the world. So yeah, we're going strong and doing all sorts of awesome, fun stuff.
You're doing great. So good to have you on here. Patrick Norton from Techzilla. We don't have to say anything about that. Everybody knows about Techzilla. Veronica's here somewhere.
Techzilla.com.
The John C. Dvorak, Techzilla.com.
Techzilla.com.
Veronica has her new gaming show.
Our new gaming show, Game On with Veronica Belmont and Brian Brushwood, debuts right after this show.
Is it today?
It's today.
Oh, my goodness.
Which means...
last week.
It debuted last week, but I mean, it'll debut again.
Yeah. It debuts every week.
The new episode debuts. How about that? Yeah. They do it live, so what the hell? I don't know. It's coming up. Is Veronica here yet?
Yes, she is.
Okay. So it's amazing. We have the entire Techzilla team is here now. Also, Mike Elgin from Elgin.com and Ed Bott from EdBott.com. It's great to have all of you here talking about all of these subjects. Do we have a score? Or is that a spoiler?
Leo.
That's a spoiler. We DVR'd it.
No spoilers.
I'm disappointed, DVR'd. Leo.
Nothing's happening. DVRs.
Nothing's happening. Let's talk about Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. A lot of times people will ask me about what's the best web host, or they'll say, what content management system do you recommend? And I've got an easy answer for anybody who wants to create a website, not just a blog, but if you're a photographer, you want to create a portfolio, if you're selling your products online, if you're a hair salon, if you're a restaurant, anybody who needs a website but doesn't want to become a web guru to make it, this is a great choice. Squarespace.com is hosting the best, I mean, really the best hosting out there. We run our Twit blog on it, inside.twit.tv. There it is right there. And you cannot break it. You cannot break it. You cannot hit you. Everybody go there right now. It doesn't matter. You cannot break it. It's wonderful. But oh, look at that video. Everybody should go watch the video of Tech News Today winning the IAWTV award for best news show. That's Josh Molina giving him the thing, and it's so exciting. And Tom Merritt. Monkeys. That's not our show. We didn't have monkeys, so maybe that's it. But Tom Merritt and Ayaz Akhtar and Sarah Lane and Jason Howell all coming to the stage and accepting the award. That's cool. Anyway, that's on a Squarespace site. So I could send you there. I don't have to worry about it. Actually, YouTube went down, but Squarespace is fine. Also, great software to help you design that site, manage that site. They've got templates that are unique by professional designers. But this is the important part. You can customize them without knowing any CSS or HTML or JavaScript. You just sliders, point and click your way to a unique, beautiful site. Now, if you know CSS and JavaScript, the sky's the limit. You can also customize there. They've got an iPhone, iPad, and Android app so that you can post, moderate, check your stats. Great stats, by the way. Best stats package out there. Widgets for all the social networks make it very easy for you to include your Twitter feed, your Facebook feed, LinkedIn, Flickr, all of that. Import and export from all the major blog APIs, too. So you can get your data in and out. Very important. You're never trapped there. From movable type WordPress, TypePad, or Blogger. It includes links, SEO, images. Everything's preserved. Comments. It's just beautiful. Look, here, go to the site, squarespace.com. You don't need any code or anything. Just try it free. All you need is the name of the site, a password for the site, and an email address so that they can mail you if you forget the password. And you're there for 14 days. You get to try it, every bit of it. Design a site. See how you like it. If you decide you want to buy, it's very affordable. And we can make it even more affordable with the offer code TWIT1, T-W-I-T, the number one. We'll give you 30% off for the first 3 months. Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. Give it a try today.
Here's the video. There they are.
There they are. Oh, they're so cute. I didn't realize Tom was that short.
Well, I think Jason is just that tall. I mean, look
Jason
at Aya.
Jason is huge.
And,
yeah,
and
standing
Coursera.
On Sarah's apple
yeah.
box.
Yeah.
But great, great people deserve that prize. I'm very proud of them. All right. We continue on with some little things. We've done the big things. Jerry Yang leaves Yahoo. I guess that's kind of a big thing.
It is for Jerry.
Founder of Yahoo. It's kind of sad. He's left the board of directors. He's left all other positions.
Wow.
After 17 years, I mean, that's not to be
I would take the money
unexpected,
and run.
Unexpected, I suppose.
Well, but remember when Terry Semel left, Jerry said, I'm going to run this company. I'm going to bring back the glory, the former glory that was Yahoo. And he could not. He just
or
couldn't
do it.
Or
maybe he thinks he did.
No. I don't think so. Is David Filo still there or is he gone too?
Philo went off to do things with giant piles of money years ago, is my understanding.
I mean,
it was a weird thing about somebody I think Callum makes a good point. It's like 17 years this guy has basically been in the trenches since pictures on web pages was this phenomenal thing.
Yeah. Right. So it's time. They brought in this guy, Scott Thompson, as CEO. And took over from Jerry. And I think the consensus is Scott is a merger and acquisition type guy. He's there to groom it for sale, ultimately.
Yep.
Maybe
yep.
bits and pieces, maybe all of it. I just feel
terrible. The guy deserves a break.
Yeah, but Yahoo, come on.
Does it make
Yahoo.
You sad?
Yeah, it makes me really sad. I remember when it was akabono.stanford.edu. Remember that? No, you're too young. Huh?
No. I'm just having flashbacks of gray pages and lots of text.
Exactly. I wonder if it's still, if I go to Akabono. He was a sumo wrestler, right?
Yeah.
And they were Stanford grad students, so they were still on the Stanford servers. So they had a server called Akabono. No, it's not there anymore.
One of the funny things about Yahoo in recent years is every time they cancel something or kill something, it's the first time you've heard of it. And
right.
when they describe it, you're like, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I wish I knew about that when
Pikes.
It existed.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. It's like, that's the problem, I guess, is they had all these great things and nobody knew.
So is Google becoming like that? When every time they cancel something, are we looking at this stuff and saying, wow, that's pretty cool.
I like Picnic. This was a standalone website that was purchased by Google not that long ago.
Yeah.
Photo editing site. They added it to Picasa Web so that you could take your images on Picasa Web. Flickr was using Picnic for a long time.
Yep.
And they're shuttering it. They bought it less than 2 years ago.
It's being Larry-fied.
Larry is, I have to, now this I admire. This is maybe what Jerry should have done.
Yeah.
Larry is operating with a machete here and cutting out a bunch of stuff. SkyMap? I mean, I love SkyMap.
But Google is doing
some
smart stuff.
They have their hands in so many different things that they have to, I mean, they can't just keep everything
They have to focus.
Around.
Right.
They do have to focus, but they also need to try new things and they need to experiment because they have the means to do so.
Right.
And they do build those features or those strong points into other things.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's totally going away. Although, I mean, if you're a user of it, you're going to feel it.
That's the difference. Yahoo just had these disparate products, and then they would just buy them and then kill them. Google has all these products, but they have a program of integrating everything. So many of the features that exist within Picnic are being built into Google Plus and the online photo editing capability of Google Plus, and they're doing that across the board. It's not just willy-nilly cancellation. They are integrating features and discarding the features and products that are not useful.
In their post on the official Google blog, they said, "We're retiring the service on April 19th so that the team can continue creating photo editing magic across Google products."
Right.
So Plus might, for instance, get a Picnic-like
It will get some of the features of Picnic, but you know,
you can copy your creations to Google Plus. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So it's, you know, and this is just, I think this is going to continue. I think, I think Steve Jobs once told Larry Page, you ought to have 5 products.
Right.
And I don't think they'll ever get down
to 1,000 things, he said.
But I think they'll cut them in half.
Right. Google Message Continuity, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
It's an email disaster recovery product for enterprise consumers.
Well, that was actually a pretty big deal. That allowed you, if you had a Microsoft Exchange system, you could back up your data using Google servers. And this one, they're cutting because they want to migrate people to Google Apps.
They don't want you to use email. Exchange. Why should they give you support for Exchange? Yeah.
Right. So they offered it for a while, and now they're just ending it.
No, Apps has been around longer. It says they launched it in December 2010. Mm. So it's only a couple of years old. No, it's only 1 year old.
Wow.
So much for continuity.
Wow. Message discontinuity. SkyMap, which is an amazing product we've used on Android phones. I think it's just fantastic. Now, here's a nice story. They're open sourcing it.
Yep.
And they're going to work with Carnegie Mellon to make sure that SkyMap continues as student projects.
Nice.
I think that's the right thing to do with that.
Yep.
Social Graph API. That sounds something like Facebook might do. The API, I love this. You got to respect Google. The API isn't experiencing the kind of adoption we'd like and is being deprecated as of today. And then Urchin, which we don't really need, but they bought that, folded it into analytics.
Yeah.
I used to use Urchin, but I don't use it anymore because I use analytics. So I think probably this is the kind of thing Jerry Yang should have been doing all along.
Yes. Yep.
Right.
Lesson learned.
Right. And clearly Google doesn't want to set themselves into a position where in 5 years they're a mess like Yahoo with different brands everywhere and a bunch of unprofitable businesses and everything non-integrated. So that is good management.
I said at the end of last year that Google should get rid of YouTube, spin it off. I know it's profitable, spin it off. Get out of the content business. I wish they would do that. That's more of a distraction than anything else. Clearly, they're not going to do it because it's integrated now so tightly into the Search Plus Your World.
Well, I mean, I could see them canceling YouTube.com and saying it's all on Google Plus now.
Wow.
The video.
You think that the Google Plus is that important? It is.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
The whole Search Plus Your World is entirely resting on the Google Plus signals.
To a large extent. I think Google's main product is going to be Google Plus. They're going to see almost everything as a Google Plus feature, right? So Google Plus will be this Uber, service. You sign in and you are using everything.
We talked last week a lot, and if you didn't watch Twit last week with Danny Sullivan, we talked a lot about Search Plus Your World and the conflict of interest it might present. But it's very clear that Google now what the strategy is. Google Plus is giving them all that social content that they aren't going to get from Twitter. I asked Matt Cutts on This Week in Google this week. I confronted him. I said, this looks like you're promoting your service over these competing services. And I don't think Google should be in that business as a search engine. It should be agnostic. He said, well, you got to understand, we would love to include Facebook. We did. Yeah. We would love to include Twitter. We did. But you can't, as engineers, you don't want to build on a platform that they could pull the rug out from on you. Twitter did.
Yeah.
And we're reluctant to do the same thing. So we developed our own thing so the rug won't be pulled out from under us.
Here's what people need to understand.
I understand.
Social networks, including Google+, are part of the invisible web. by default. They're not indexable. You can't just index Facebook and everything on it, including you definitely can't index the permissions infrastructure
right.
on. And so it's part of the invisible web. Everything that appears on any search engine that's part of the invisible web, including social networks, has to be part of the result of a business deal that has to be made in agreement between the two partners. Now, there's a problem with that. For a while, it was great. Google needed social signals. They were panicking because of Facebook, so they made a deal with Twitter.
They paid for the fire hose.
Exactly. Then Twitter came back and said, we want double the fee, and we want ad revenue, and they want to set a precedence.
Oh,
and
I hadn't heard this. Yes. Is this research that you...
This is last summer.
Interesting.
And so, and remember the real-time search?
That I was remember it Twitter. Got pulled, but we didn't know why.
They
so they
pulled
wanted
it because Twitter
much.
Said, we want wait, wow. we want to you to violate your thing about sharing ad revenue, and we want double the money. We want $30 million a year. And Google said, no, thanks.
Not going to happen.
And so now that Google Plus exists and they have all these great search signals, there's no incentive for Google to make a deal with Twitter or Facebook. And by the way, it's not just Twitter and Facebook. There are 200, 300 significant social networks in the world, and Google isn't making deals with any of them. And so really, it's not going to happen. This Google Plus integration into search is going to be the social thing for the most part, and that's just how it's going
to
be.
It does put the screws to somebody like Lady Gaga, who was not on Google Plus last year,
right.
last week, and did join Google Plus, because if you're not on Google Plus...
And the White House.
And you don't have those signals.
Exactly.
That's why it's a conflict of interest, in my opinion.
Well, the thing is that we get back to what's a product, what's a feature. is Google Plus and Search two products? I mean, if you look at, people think Gmail is a separate product from Google Plus. Is it? When you sign up for Facebook, you get messages. Is that a separate product?
Right.
No, it's a feature of the same product. Why? Because it's integrated. Now, Google's integrating these services, making that taking products and turning them into features. So it's a slippery slope, and it's not absolutely not an antitrust issue. That's going to be tossed out.
It's not
until they start ebook publishing.
Not. That's right, and then all of a sudden it is. No, they don't have enough of a dominant. 65% of the market and shrinking is not a monopoly.
It looks like a monopoly.
It feels like a monopoly, but it's not. But Google's lawyers will be able to demonstrate that it's not.
Thank goodness for Bing, right?
If it
weren't for Bing,
that's right. Yeah, so it's
Danny Sullivan, they are being investigated whether it's not a monopoly or not.
Everybody's complaining about Google because they don't like it. But I mean, Danny Sullivan had a great example.
Mike, do you have I'm not trying to be rude here, but do you have a law degree, or are you just, is this just your personal opinion?
I've read all the opinions by the lawyers and the non-lawyers, and if somebody wants to make a case that 65% is a monopoly, we can debate that. But 65% of a market isn't like Microsoft's 92%, for example.
Okay. Because the definition of monopoly power is not tied to percentages. The DOJ and the FTC both have ongoing investigations, as does the EU of Google. They wouldn't be doing that.
They're investigating on behalf of complaints, but I mean it's not just market share. It's also how hard is it to switch? Typing four letters means you switch to Bing, and that's not exactly lock-in. I mean, even Microsoft, Microsoft argued that anybody can reformat a Windows machine and install Linux. And that was considered a significant thing. And that's pretty legitimate that's a significant action for a lot of users.
Not a Windows 8 tablet, apparently.
Right. But I mean, typing Bing.com is not exactly a difficult process to switch. Yes, it's my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, but it's my opinion that is not an antitrust issue. It's just, to me, inconceivable that they would look at Google search as a monopoly that has lock-in.
It is a pretty fluid environment. Although Bing's doing the same thing with Facebook. They're massaging their search results, their native search results, with social signals from Facebook.
And that's yet another reason why Google is never going to make a deal with Facebook, because hungrier and deeper pocketed companies like Microsoft are willing to pay top dollar to integrate Facebook into their search results so that they have this exclusive content. And Google's not going to pay those prices. They're already, they already
have
social...
Well, they don't need to.
Exactly.
The Google Plus strategy now looks a little clearer.
Exactly.
However, I think the shooting war, whether the DOJ decides to prosecute, it looks like Facebook, Apple, and everybody else is going after Google. Facebook just made a bid for something. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I want to talk about Audible.com. I am, as we all know, I don't have to tell you, a fan of audiobooks. I listen all the time. It started when I had to commute 2 hours a day to the Screensavers. Saved my life. I would have killed Patrick. No, I wouldn't, but I would have killed myself probably because I just was horrible. And yet, you know, I look back now on my Audible account, I have 500 books in my library. That's a
you
lot of reading.
You probably read more books in your car than you did in college.
Exactly. You know, the truth is what happened with Audible is it brought reading back into my life because I didn't have time. Nobody has time anymore to read. But with Audible, those downtimes in your car, at the gym, and when you're doing housework suddenly become alive with education, with fun, with entertainment. Everything from Stephen King, the best science fiction, to great political stuff. And we were talking about Larry Lessig, and I'm just looking at Audible.com and his book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It, is now on Audible. You can get this absolutely free or any of their 100,000 books free. Here's what happens. You get two books. We're going to go to audible.com/twit2. That'll sign you up for the Platinum account. That's two credits. So most books are a single credit. There's some books like The Game of Thrones, I think, is two credits. So you get to decide how you want to spend those credits. You get two credits a month. Your first month's free. Your first two books are free. You cancel at any time. That's how it works. So get Larry Lessig. Did you read Reamed, the Neal Stephenson book? Did you like that? I didn't like it. I'll say right up front.
I liked it a lot more than Anathem.
I loved Anathem.
Anathem, I know I will never read Anathem again.
Oh, I will.
It was a punishing last 200 pages. I read the new one in about 3 days.
Yeah. Well, Snow Crash, we all agree, great book. Cryptonomicon. Right.
Unbelievably fantastic book.
Fabulous. Maybe my favorite book of all time. Get that one for free. I mean, I'm just – they have the entire Baroque cycle on here. I mean,
which is
–
I'm actually in the middle of rereading all of those. The Baroque cycle is fantastic.
See, this is the beauty of it. When it's on Audible, any book that you've ever got in your library, your entire library is available at any time. Use the Audible app on Android or the iPhone, and you get your whole list of books, and you can listen to any one of them. These books are yours kind of forever. So get two books free forever at audible.com. Just finished The Marriage Plot. Boy, is that a great book. I love Eugenides. The new Stephen King, IQ84, the Steve Jobs book. There are plenty of things to choose from. Go to audible.com, browse around. Once you've found two books you want, new Orson Scott Card just came out. Love his stuff. Once you find two books you want, sign up for the Platinum account at audible.com/twit2, and those two books are yours free. They play on almost everything, all the iPhones. You know, they don't yet support Windows Phone 7, but I'm told March. A little birdie, not from Audible, but a little birdie told me March. that would be nice. It's great on, but I have the Android app, I have the iPhone app, just fantastic. Audible.com/twit2, we thank them for their support. Guess we lost Callie. Is she dropping
she
out?
She went to go buy a book on Audible. Yeah,
she's
going
Audible.
Like, wow, that's a great deal. You know, I've been a subscriber since 2000.
Me
I
too.
Believe. Really?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Love
it's,
it.
It's incredible.
I did books on tape for a long time. Yeah. That was the company. And right. You get a box of cassettes, 20 kids, but you only have a month.
I used to go to the library.
The library.
And check out
cassettes.
Tapes.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
Weird to even imagine now. Oh. But yeah, it's
you
awesome.
You guys are old.
It's true. If I can share my little process for consuming audio content, I always have, I have a short list of podcasts, including some of yours. I don't know if this, I should admit this or
no,
not, but
right.
I listen to everything at double speed.
Yep. A lot of people do.
Yeah, because your brain
can do that
take
with Audible too, yeah.
And whenever I run out of podcasts, which happens a couple, three times a week, I switch over to books.
Right.
And it's just a fantastic way to make sure I'm always up on the latest audio content. And then I also get the sort of evergreen.
You must have a commute. I thought you worked in your jammies.
We exercise a lot. We do a lot of long distance walking and running and stuff like that. So
it's a lifesaver. I mean, I like to exercise. It feels good. I feel good afterwards, but it's boring.
Yeah.
Having an audiobook or a podcast, it just does a lifesaver, I think.
Absolutely.
Got you back. Thank you, Callie. Thought we'd
Sorry
lost
about
you.
That.
No. You know, the internet, how it is. Facebook in talks to replace YouTube as Vivo's host. This is a breaking story from Greg Sandoval on CNET. That would be huge. Vivo
is the channel that YouTube created for music labels. All the legitimate music stuff is on there. If Facebook stole this away from YouTube, that'd be huge. It'd also raise issues because, of course, one of the ways YouTube deals with copyright issues is by pushing you to the legitimate videos over at Vevo.
Yeah.
Losing Vevo could be big. Facebook, it says Greg, is interested in a similar arrangement to the one Vevo now has with Google's YouTube. Facebook would stream Vevo's music videos, and the two companies would sell ads and share in the profits. This makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Yeah. They want to de-Googleify.
Well, they want to own all music.
Yeah.
They've got Spotify. They've got Mom.
Facebook,
they've got
Google, Aria. Or Apple, or
everybody does.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah, at this point, it's such a giant battle.
How important? Now, you're big into music. How important is social to you? You don't care what other people think.
Do you remember the thing about the old?
You don't care. You couldn't care less.
I use the online services for discovery, but like I said, I still like to own the physical media for the music.
For people like me, if I know what I'm interested in, what you listen to, because you're a musical maven. So you are a taste setter, a trend setter, and so I'm serious. There are a few people that I know. Right. I'm not in hip to what the kids are listening to. Not that you're a kid, but
but I was.
Actually, Callie, what are you listening to?
I listen to people like Regina Spektor.
Yeah, love her.
Colby Calais. Those are my people.
Yeah. So are you on? Do you use Spotify?
Yes, I use Spotify. I subscribe to the premium service so that I can have. Oh, yeah.
Now, here's the question.
It's one of the only things I spend money on.
I should know this, actually, because I follow you on Facebook. Do you pipe your Spotify listens into Facebook? You don't. Why not? Because how am I supposed to know what you're listening to?
You can ask her.
I actually get the whole, social music listening, it doesn't work for me. So I prefer to be a little bit more private.
I kind of like it. So if I'm watching my little timeline here on the, or whatever, the ticker on the right, and it says, you know, my friend listened to this, and I'm interested in what you listen to, I might, now some of this stuff is silly. Like I'm seeing Susie Slanina's words that she plays in Words with Friends. Like that's meaningless to me because I don't even see the game, right? But okay. I see that Carmen listened to I Need a Dollar.
That's a great song.
By Mike Check. So I can listen to that, right?
I might be more interested. I've got one of the big issues in Facebook, for example. But I had my Facebook account before they had fan pages, and so I have friended everybody.
Oh,
so
yeah, you got to go back.
There.
You got to make that change.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I still don't think that I would go that route. I like being private. There's one person in my life that I trust to give me music recommendations, and that's my sister. And
so you
I
follow
will listen
her.
To other stuff, but I don't also feel like I have a ton of time to explore that way. Right. I kind of prefer, if I'm going to explore, to use Pandora, who right. knows my interests already.
This, to me, I like better than Pandora because Pandora seems like weird. Some of like the random features and stuff. It seems like it plays the same stuff over and over and
I think there's a lot more interest.
Yeah. You aren't thumbs upping then.
I need
thumbs
to thumbs
downing.
Up more.
You need to have to participate in it.
Okay.
I think there's a lot more interest in sharing. This is an expression of who I am than there is in being shared with. And I think that's why one of the reasons people like this on Facebook, because Facebook will make you believe that you're sharing your music with all your friends, but they actually don't. They spare your friends.
They don't have to see it.
They're censoring left and right. And everybody's happy because...
You mean they're not listening? You mean...
I'm sorry, Leo.
You know, it's funny because I left... on New Year's Eve, I left Spotify. I did a search for Auld Lang Syne and found like 1,000 songs, started playing and forgot about it and let it run. And so on my Facebook, there literally, it was 1,000...
I'm just like I would if I was ever on Facebook more than once a year, I would immediately be calling like 911 and sending somebody to your house
right.
to make sure
so
you're
depressed.
Not killing yourself. Like
the year is over.
His 1,000 Auld Lang Syne marathon before he slits his wrists in the bathtub. I mean,
well, now I realize that probably everybody who did follow me on Facebook has censored my music stream, and I'm not talking to anybody anymore. Obviously.
All acquaintance will be forgot.
Yeah.
They forgot me.
Or unfriended.
All right. Unfriend as fast as possible. I like Callie's shirt. We haven't mentioned that on the air, but she's got Grover. And what does it say on there? It says, I have
enough friends. Confirm, ignore.
You don't mean that, do you?
No. I just think it's funny because it's very
antisocial.
Indicative of my Facebook life.
Right.
I saw a Valentine's card that says, not sent from my iPhone.
Not made by Apple. All right, one last story, and then we'll wrap it up. And it's kind of a sad one. Kodak, the other shoe dropped. It did file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. We were hearing the rumors. Kodak had said, if we can't sell these patents, we're just going to have to. Now, Chapter 11 is not out of business. It's a reorganization.
Yeah, right? Chapter 11 is either a rebirth or a flaming hole in the ground. It's a little too early. I hate to be the fountain of joy here, but basically companies either come out of Chapter 11 or they disappear in Chapter 11. Yeah.
But they have no real
assets.
Business. Oh, no, they got tons of assets. They have intellectual property. They have patents.
Yeah, but if nobody buys it. Right.
They're basically going to turn into a non-consumer company, right?
They don't have cameras. They don't have film. You know, those are dying industries. And so, really, they're in everything must go phase right now. And the patents are going to be the biggest thing.
Kodak says it has $5.1 billion in assets. I'd take that. Oh, and $6.75 billion in debt.
Yeah.
Including $12 million it owes Nokia for intellectual property royalties. Oh, well. So if you go to... it is kind of sad. KodakTransforms.com. In some ways, they seem to me, and certainly they did better than Polaroid, to be a company that had turned the digital corner pretty well. Mm-hmm. They have cameras.
Right.
They bought Ofoto, so they have a photo sharing site.
I think associations in the minds of consumers are way more powerful than people think. I mean, Kodak, you think film. I think this is one of the reasons Microsoft is having trouble selling its pretty awesome phone, actually, because people don't think of Microsoft as a hot consumer electronics company. And no matter how cool their phone is, there's an association with these companies with what they did in the past. And it's unfortunate. Kodak could be a very innovative company, but people think of it as a film company. They sell buggy whips.
Also, one of their executives said that we were kind of hooked. Kodak's business was kind of hooked on the very high margin photo processing and printing business, which is gone. I mean, sorry, but you go digital, nobody does photo processing anymore.
Well, it's crazy when you look at it. This is a company that made, I'm looking at an article in the Austin Statesman, but your company was making $676 million in 2007. But it's incredible when you realize Kodak's global payroll is 18,800 people down from 145,300 in 1988. And just in Rochester, which is a town in upstate New York, it's gone from 60,000 employees in 1982 down to 7,000.
Jeez. And look at the stock price, which is like 80 cents now.
Yeah.
So that's sad.
Yep.
I think there are a lot of companies that are getting into new technologies and, Microsoft getting into consumer electronics, things like that. I think they have to work extremely hard and they have to do things completely different in order to get consumers to change their minds about what the company is. And we're seeing a lot of that across the board and only a couple are really doing it. And I think that's the real thing that people have to do is just figure out how to change people's minds, which I guess is probably a longstanding business issue in general.
Yes.
But it's going to be interesting to see who can actually do it.
Ed, you cover Microsoft. I mean, if they were ever going to be a winner, this Nokia 900 phone, the hardware is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Windows Phone 7 looks great on it.
Right.
Is Mike right? Is the perception that Microsoft is a has-been, is that going to keep them from... I mean, they've got a product.
I think it has a lot to do with it. I mean, it is. I love Windows.
Do you like the Windows Phone, Kelly?
I do. But I won't. But I'm not carrying it around on a daily basis either.
Yeah.
So it's
So here's the problem. Microsoft had a string of failures in the mid 2000s. Windows Vista was a big failure. You know, there were technical problems with it, but much more important was just from
perception.
A branding point of view.
Hotmail,
while it was originally an innovative product, then became a mess, and now it's again an innovative product. So they have this. You know, the public mindset is, you know, Microsoft's a company that makes defective products. The fact that they've been on a roll making very good products for the last 2 or 3 years. You have to overcome the public perception that that the company can't get out of its own way, and you know. So maybe some people have suggested that, you know, Windows Phone should actually be called X-Phone to, you know, capitalize on Xbox, right, which does have a positive reputation. I don't know, but I think
also that their reputation is in addition. I think it's more that they're a corporate company now; they're an enterprise company, rather than a consumer electronics company. I mean, you know, this is Apple's big advantage. Apple could sell horseshoes and the fanboys would buy them up. And
or TVs.
Because they've really established themselves as a very stylish, cool consumer electronics company.
This, I have to say, this Lumia 900 is absolutely worthy of Apple. It's a gorgeous design.
Yes.
It's a spectacular phone.
Yep. And you know, but this is how you chip away at the perception. If they can just stay at it, to its credit, Microsoft is really good at hanging in there with things they believe in.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They're in it for the long run.
Yep.
And if they can gain, if they gained 0.5% of share a month for the next 2 years, they'd be at probably about 15% of the market, which all of a sudden would be, now you're a player.
Yeah.
I saw a Windows Phone ad. This is interesting, on a Spanish language station. I was watching soccer. and it was positioned as a cheap phone, the Lumia 710. Mm-hmm. But as everything you would want in a smartphone, but only costing whatever it was, $50.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's part of the market that they got to be very careful, cuz you don't want to be perceived as a low price leader. But
that's where the Nokia relationship comes in very handy. Nokia has direct billing relationships with its customers in something like 79 countries around the world, and so they can bring smartphones to the masses on these in emerging markets, and so you can get share that way. It's not very profitable, but you can get share that way. In fact, that's kind of what Android has done in a way. A lot of the phenomenal growth in Android share has been in emerging markets where people are buying very cheap phones that are running the Android, older versions of Android that are basically free.
Well, friends, I thank you so much for being here. There's so much more we could talk about, but I hear a football game has broken out. So
what?
We'll wrap this up just a trifle early. Callie, thank you so much for being here. Livid Lobster is the company. Geekbeat.tv is the home to Callie's great show. Everybody must watch. Lots of good CES coverage this year. And I presume that's all at geekbeat.tv if we want to watch, yes?
Absolutely.
Yep.
And people commented in the chat room, if you're watching on video, about my awesome headphones.
Yeah, what are those?
Product placement.
That's my little logo. I call him Dexter. These are the VMota Crossfades.
You have like official Geekbeat headphones?
Named after a serial killer.
VMota actually does custom plates you can put on their headphones, which are actually shockingly good sounding. I was really impressed.
They're awesome sounding, and they fit very comfortably.
So where do we get them?
I think it's kind of cool. It's vmota.com, I think.
But can I get the Geekbeat logo on there?
I don't know. Well, I'll make that happen. Would you actually wear it, Leah?
Sure. It looks a little... Can I get it in something besides pink?
This is red.
I'm sorry. Okay. that was one thing. And I think you and I need to have a headphone brand, because 50 Cent, Ludacris...
Dre,
we were sitting on stage, and Sonamax came up with their new headphones, and it was Arabian Prince, who was apparently a famous person. He was with the NWA. I said, "Oh, you're the Arabian Prince. I thought you were an Arabian Prince." So apparently this is the thing to do, is have your own headphone brand.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
there you
go. It went off on a tangent there. You can wrap up now and go watch football.
No. I'm, now I'm. So what Dre's are called Beats.
Well, Beats is a larger company. It does audio consulting.
We could have the Beats off or something like that.
Maybe you could have the off best
beats. Off Beats
earbuds dedicated to audiobook listening.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Callie. Great to see you.
Geekbeat.tv.
You got the little robot that rides its own bicycle on the front cover right now. That was really cool. I really wanted
to. So you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mr. Patrick Norton, my good friend and buddy from the Screensavers, hosts techzilla.com. T-K-Z-I-L-L.
When you spell it with a K, you get the .com.
You get the .com. And you can watch that and enjoy it. And Veronica Belmont, your co-host, and you've wrapped HD Nation into it too, right? Mm-hmm. So we get lovely Robert Herron.
Yeah, basically, yeah, two episodes a week.
The newly civilt Robert Herron.
Dude's lost some weight.
He's wasting away.
No,
he's got a ways to go before
he's getting
wasting.
Like Marine hard. He's kind of starting to scare me. He's lost 50 pounds.
Marine
he's running.
Tough. Yeah. Also, Mike Elgin from Elgin, E-L-G-A-N .com, and follow him on Google Plus. That's the best thing to do. And you can also subscribe to the newsletter. You might see him in Computer World and other
you might.
Hard copy you publications.
Might. You might.
Computer World still has paper.
Yes. Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, I think they do.
You don't even
who
know.
Reads it? I have no idea. I just
PC Magazine's gone. E-Week's gone. They're all gone.
All those computer people, they have computers.
Ed used to be Windows Sources, right, Ed?
No. It was PC Computing.
PC Computing.
And before that, PC World.
PC yeah. World. All gone.
Mike was at Windows.
I was at Windows Magazine.
You were Windows Magazine.
Four
I was gone.
I was Windows Sources.
Windows Sources gone. So Computer World's like the last print magazine.
It's and
the
only PC one you World.
Could, allegedly.
And Maximum PC.
The only magazine one. You could read in the can. Oh, PC World is still in paper?
PC World, Maximum PC.
Yeah, the Imagine guys keep making print magazines like there's somebody going to buy those.
Hey, apparently they're still buying them because they're still in the newsstands.
They're still doing it. Yeah, you know what? You need something for the airport. You can't read Playboy in an airplane, I found out.
I don't want to know.
It's just a rule. Mr. Edbot, thank you so much for being here on ZDNet, or just go to his website, edbot.com, for links to all the stuff he does. Great to see you. Thank you. All of you. I know you're all 49ers fans, so it was a great sacrifice that you made today.
No spoilers, Leo.
I don't know. No I don't know what's happening. I see right now it looks like a Kentucky Fried Chicken ad. That's all I know. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can.
This is amazing.